Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to XYZ. I just wanted to say this week that I am really, really saddened and angry and upset about what is happening in Ukraine. Nick and I haven't really talked about this monologue before. I'm doing it, so we're doing it live. But yeah, it's just I have a bunch of friends who are Canadian Armed Forces personnel that were helping to train the Ukrainian Armed Forces over the last couple of years. And I don't know. I don't know what to say. Nick, feel free to chime in here at any point. I feel really powerless in this situation. And I think it sucks for everyone. Like, I'm not sure if you've heard, but like a lot of the Russian soldiers were conscripts. So a Russian military service is compulsory. So they were conscripts and then they were forced into the invasion. Ugh. And disobeying orders is 15 to 20 years in prison.
That's horrific.
Yeah. I mean, so it's like nobody's winning here, you know? I just it's completely senseless.
I mean, I think there's a lunatic behind all of this. Yeah. I don't know what to say. I mean, war is horrific and there's no need for it. It's brutal.
Yeah, and I was kind of going back and forth on even saying this, but you know, I guess on saying, you know, having a monologue about this, because it's not like Putin's going to like hear our podcast and be like, oh shit, I shouldn't have done that. But, you know, I guess more than anything, I just want to say if anyone, I know we have listeners from the Ukraine. I hope you're well. Hope you're safe. If anyone listening has family in the Ukraine, I hope you're well. Hope you're safe. What else can we say? You know, let us know if we can do anything.
Yeah. I mean, that's a free people, a free country. I don't think they're going to put up. They're not putting up with it. So,
no.
Good on them.
Well, I saw something the other day that just it kind of terrified me and made me incredibly proud. And I think it's one of the bravest things I've ever seen. It was a crowd of Ukrainian civilians with their hands raised, standing in front of a Russian military convoy to stop it from advancing. And Russian soldiers are like shooting over their heads to try and get them to disperse. And they didn't, they just stood there.
Wow.
You know, I can't even imagine the bravery it takes to do this kind of stuff.
It's a terrifying situation.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know that's a difficult note to start on, but I just wanted to say something, you know, like, yeah, our thoughts are with you. I don't know if you know this, but anyone who doesn't know this, the Canadian government right now is matching donations. Any donations that you make to the Canadian Red Cross's Ukrainian relief fund is matched by the Canadian government dollar for dollar. So I made a donation the other day. I would encourage anyone that has the means to make a donation as well. And I don't know what else we can really do beyond that.
I did not know that. That's amazing.
Yeah. You know, like, that's part of the issue with charities is a lot of them aren't perfect. You know, they don't spend all your money on what they're supposed to, but the Canadian Red Cross seems like they're pretty good in that regard. And then you're kind of doubling your impact because the Canadian government's matching it. So,
yeah, I mean, for sure. They're the logistics and management involved in running a charity. I'm sure there's lots that go into it, but
yes,
I think ultimately that any amount of help that they can provide would be have a positive impact.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so with that, we'll get back to our regular programming.
Okay.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to XYZ, the podcast about CNC, robotics, automation, small business, and more. I don't have the script in front of me today, so I'm ad-libbing it.
You nailed it.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Adam Goff, owner of Goff's Custom Knives, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nick Frank, of the Frank Brothers Guitar Company.
Yes, okay. You nailed it, and I talked all over
yeah,
you.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
This is the... CNC automation, robotics, over talk, business, and more.
Yes, we need to have to talk over each other a little bit.
It's a podcast. I mean, that's kind of what you sign up for.
Is what it is.
Budget podcasts.
This really is a budget podcast. Yeah, we actually pay money to make this podcast. We're not one of those big podcasts where they're making millions, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. How are things with you, mate? What have you been up to?
All right. Well, okay. We've been all over these shop improvements.
Ooh.
My space in front of my house is getting dialed.
Oh, nice. Are you putting down the Kaizen foam with all of your tools in it?
I have a tool cabinet, a tool chest, which I've never been able to successfully use a tool chest. Oh, they always get full of clutter and mess and random stuff. But I'm committed to making this work because it looks so cool.
But that's the only reason.
Really? Well, okay, so I have lots of stuff that I need to operate the machine. So I've got all these little little clamp plates that we made to fasten down pickup rings when we machine them. And you know, we can machine 12 pickup rings at a time. So I need 12 clamps, and we have 4 different types of pickups that we can make. So you do the math, Aaron.
You have a lot I'm bad at math. I don't know what you're doing. You've got a lot of clamps. Yeah, 52 clamps.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, obviously there's like one or two extra of each. So yeah, that math adds up. So, you know, I've got those all lined up in the shelf, all neat and tidy. I've got I had to actually take that. So the Haas comes with what they call a convenience package, I think.
And yes, with a little shelf and stuff.
Yeah, the shelf I left, the shelves on the left side of the door I left. But on the right side under the controller, there's this like kind of funky little hanging shelf that has like looks like a cup holder. For pens, maybe, and like hooks, like spots to put like I don't know, a wrench or your brush, and then your blowgun. And right. I just took that off. It was kind of it wasn't working for me. And then I butted up a tool chest to that, and it fit perfectly. And then in that, now I've got my brush. I've got some a little fixture plate that I use for doing an op 2 on pick guards. I've got all of my clamps. Mm-hmm. And then I'm actually keeping some stock in there in the cabinet as well for pickup rings.
Interesting.
And pick guards, which I wasn't normally down for. But we make these pick guard blanks, and then we turn them into pick guards. So it doesn't really make sense to make them into pickguard blanks and then take those pickguard blanks somewhere else and store them. Cause I need to do a second operation on them.
That's fine.
At any time. So yeah, it works. It's looking slick. And I got rid of my workbench that I was using. I have this 50, it's a 5 foot wide, wood top workbench. We've got like a dozen of them maybe.
And
everybody works at them, but I was using it as a workbench / computer station / like using it for CNC prep stuff. It was just a mess. So I moved that. Now I have I moved that somewhere where I can use it as an actual workstation when I'm doing glue ups and fretboard leveling and binding and all sorts of stuff. And I replaced that at the CNC with a 3 foot by not even 2 foot deep workbench on casters.
Okay.
And I made myself like a little U around the, in front of the Haas. So the, I've got my, the Haas in front of me, and then beside it, my, onto the left of it, I've got my little computer table on casters, and on the other side of it, I've got the cabinet, and then like a little sort of cubby thing that I have like pallets in for the Haas. So it's looking pretty tight. Me and Ryan were working all day getting our side of the shop. We live in like the wood shop area, getting our shit dialed, because the guys have been working on their, like the other side of the shop for weeks. It's looking amazing. And our shit, our side was looking like a fucking dumpster. Really? So we
also have to come check it out.
I'm pretty proud. Looks good. Still needs some work.
Right. On the other hand, I took everything in my shop and just fucking emptied it on the floor.
Your shop looks like a disaster.
Disaster zone at the moment. Yeah.
Made me feel really good about my space. No, ours looked like yours did today. So
yeah,
you have to make a mess in order to, you know, declutter.
Well, the issue, just
bring everything out to the surface.
For sure. Yeah. Well, the issue for me though is really that I'm doing something that my shop is not set up for right now. So I've been building a little, it's almost like a sound isolation booth for those recording people, like a vocal booth. You know, you might have seen them in offices. It's like a quiet workroom. I'm kind of building an extreme version of one of those to go in my shop, because I did actually accept that programming job. Thank you, sir. So I'm starting that on the 14th, and I really want to be able to like go to the shop a little bit early, you know, load up the CNCs, hit cycle start, and then work, you know. But I don't think that trying to work next to the machine is gonna be all that great.
No.
For a variety of reasons, I'm gonna be in calls and stuff. I did actually buy this wicked headset. It's a gaming headset. It's called the Razer Black Shark 2. And it's kind of styled after like helicopter, you know, the headsets they wear in helicopters so they can talk to each other.
Yeah.
And it has the same type of microphone, so it actually has two mics back to back that are out of phase with each other. So when there's background noise, it actually passively cancels the background noise out of your microphone. So I can run the machines and like have a call wearing this headset and no one can hear the background, which is crazy. But I don't want to have to hear the background noise either. So I built this little room. The thinnest wall is 3/4 inch MDF. And the thickest wall is almost 2 inches of MDF.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. It's,
is it going to, in the inside of that room, is there any insulation?
MDF is actually like it would really
be bouncy.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. It definitely has some reverb. All of the inside surfaces are going to be carpeted.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So the wall to my left when I'm sitting in there, the wall behind me and the wall to my right will be carpeted, and the floor will be carpeted. And then the front wall and the top wall are painted white.
Cool. That's awesome. Now,
mm-hmm.
McMaster does sell sound insulation. I'm sure you've looked into this.
Yeah. Is it needed? Is it, the thing is, MDF is actually really, really good at damping sound and damping vibration.
Cool.
Yeah, it's already pretty quiet, and right now it doesn't even seal up properly. Like I haven't installed any of the stripping around the door.
I suppose what you're trying to do too is keep the sound from coming in, rather than, I think a lot of these maybe, often you're trying to keep the sound from going out.
Right.
So like
your sound absorption
from inside the room.
Yeah. Or it's like a vocal booth where you don't want that reverb. I don't want that either, because I want to be able to have like the option of recording the podcast from there. You know, if it makes my day easier rather than having to like run home to record the podcast, I'd love to be able to record from in there. But, you know, any soft surface tends to really break up the reflections of the noise. So I think the carpet, you know, when my body is in there as well, my body is a soft surface, very soft these days. And so between that and the carpet, I think it should be good. But we'll see. I'll try it out once it's all done and see if something more is needed.
Well, congratulations on the new job.
Thank you, sir. I'm excited. They seem like a really good company to work for, so it's going to be very interesting.
It's also extremely cool that you'll be working from your shop, being able to run parts. It's like a test drive for your future setup.
Yeah, absolutely. Like as I said, going there a little early, you know, I only have to get there like 15 minutes early or whatever to do a changeover of parts and run the machines. And then at nighttime, I have it set up so that, you know, before I leave, I'll run parts again. And then I'll probably spend an hour or two most nights, you know, just doing manual stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping it should. I mean, I have to dial like the number of knives that I'm making back a little bit. Right. But honestly, I'm probably not going to have to dial it back that much.
Okay. Interesting.
Know? So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
I mean, there's the other aspects too, though, like the shipping and packaging, all that. That's, you know, still going to be time consuming.
Yeah. Honestly, though, I find if I have Saturday and Sunday off, I get really bored. So most of the time I end up in the shop on Sunday anyway.
Right.
So, you know, I think the one thing that I've been chasing for the last couple of years is like trying to find more time to do new and interesting projects, you know, and that's a really hard one because it's you kind of have to build free time into your schedule to allow that. So we'll see what the balance is. I really want to, you know, allow myself as much of that time as possible.
Yeah, well, that's exciting. I mean, also the financial freedom you'll have as a result of this, I think, will be invigorating.
Yes, I've been looking at houses. We're actually kind of wondering whether we should be building a house rather than buying. It doesn't seem like it would be any more expensive. And the biggest difference, you know, like my friend that bought his place recently, his house was built in the 80s. And that thing just has like no insulation, you know, like he spent in the winter, he spends like $250 on electricity and $500 on propane a month.
Oh,
you know, like,
well, my house was built in the 20s and the second floor has zero insulation. It's in our bedrooms, freezing cold. So if you could, I mean, people buy these old houses in Toronto. I mean, all over, I'm sure this extremely common thing to do. They literally gut them. They make it a new house. They just keep the structure.
Yep.
And now you got a brand new house. So yeah, starting from scratch, I mean, just you're just building a foundation, framing, and then basically just doing a reno in that space.
So
different than just renovating a place, I imagine.
Well, and the interesting thing that would potentially enable would be for the house to be totally off grid. Because like when I look toward the future, one of the things that would be really nice is to like really minimize the ongoing costs. You know, I think that's the thing that kills you. I'm fine with like one, you know, if someone was like, oh, you can have a $300 electricity bill every month, or you have to spend $20,000 right now. I'd take the $20,000 if I can swing it, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, if the house is really energy efficient, then that means that like heating and cooling, which are basically the biggest energy costs in a home, would be very reasonable. So we could, you know, put solar panels in, batteries in, and potentially run the house and the shop off solar.
Well, I guess if it's off grid, it makes it a lot easier to find a piece of land to build on because, you know, you're not having to run power to that property.
Yep. Yeah, and honestly, like running power, especially if you're trying to get like, you know, three phase from the power company, that could be pretty equal to the cost of like a really serious solar setup, you know?
Yeah.
I did actually find, so we were talking a couple of weeks ago about the used solar panels. I found a place in the States called Santan Solar that sell used solar panels. The issue with those is that they take the identification labels off them. Oh, I'm not sure why
that sounds illegal.
It's not, I don't think. I think it's just because they're buying them out of previous like solar farms or something, and they have to like, I don't know, protect the, or they're trying to make sure that the warranty doesn't continue, or I don't know. It's probably some part of the deal of reselling them, you know. But I found a place in Canada. It's actually just an individual, so I'm not going to tip my hand quite yet. Who has a monumental amount of 250 watt solar panels. And if you buy like 100 of them, they're $60 each.
Whoa.
Yeah, which is ludicrous. And he has another price break at 250 panels. They're $50 each. So that means I could buy 60 kilowatts of solar panels for $12,500. And
how much, you know, space do you need? How much land do you need for that much solar panel?
It's quite a bit. It would be the entire roof of the workshop, the entire roof of the house, and then some ground mounted units as well.
So, okay. Just trying to understand, like if you, you know, have a house with a roof, the roof like lasts 20 years, depending on what it's made out of. Right. How do you access that roof to maintain it or to, you know, fix it, repair it, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the theoretical first step is to get rid of your shitty shingles, if that's what you have on your roof. I hate shingles. They're a North American thing, and they suck.
You guys use koala fur in Australia?
Yes, that's right. We actually just put the koalas in front of a steamroller, and then we, we squish them into a big flat roof-shaped panel. No, it's like
a North American thing to have sympathy for koalas.
Yeah,
not an Australian thing.
Noisy little bastards there. No, like steel roof will last you know, the lifetime of the panels, and then when you're replacing the solar panels, you replace the roof.
Okay, there. Cool. Yeah, I've got a neighbor up the street that's got a steel roof. It looks nice.
Yeah, I really like them. In Australia, they're super popular because the two main types of roofs that you get in Australia are tile, so like a terracotta tile that are kind of like shingles.
Yeah,
and they hang. They're overlapping. They hang on top of each other. The issue with those is that if there's a bushfire, the wind can blow embers up like through the gaps in the tiles and set fire to the inside of your roof.
Yikes.
So steel roofs are like the go-to. And I will say there is nothing better than the sound of a rainstorm on a steel roof.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It's like being in a tent.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's just like very present.
Although that's in Australia where there's like no insulation in any of the houses pretty much. So probably or rain. In Canada where, well, yeah, we get rain some places sometimes. Yeah, I actually, you know what? I do remember I had a job in Australia that I had to like a 15-minute walk for part of my commute, and I got rained on twice in 3 years. You know, it's just a different frequency of rain than it is here in Canada, that's for sure.
Well, we're about to hit the rainy season.
So, yeah, it's fun.
Get times. Ready. Yeah, I've got a flat roof. I think it's tar.
Oh, at the workshop?
No. Oh, at the workshop, yeah. But here, yeah. My house has a flat.
Oh, interesting.
My house has a flat roof, no attic.
Well, whack some panels on there, buddy. Do you want some solar panels?
Yeah, it cut me in on that price break.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, so I really like the idea of going off grid. And to do it like really, really seriously is super expensive if you buy all the components new. But buying used panels, that's a really big savings.
Sure.
And then the other part of it is just batteries. Like the more batteries you have, the more better. But yeah, if you buy batteries new, you know, they're like between... I haven't actually looked at like manufactured battery prices in a while, but you're probably looking at like between $500 and $1,000 a kilowatt hour, I should say. And I would want like 50 to 100 kilowatt hours worth of storage at the least. So yeah, I'm not going to be buying new batteries. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. You should talk to my brother, John.
Oh yeah.
He's been in the solar panel game for a decade.
Oh,
well, not just solar. He does financing for solar, right. or for like clean energy.
Cool.
But anyways, he knows his shit. He does like technical stuff. So.
Hmm. I'll have to give him a call then. Yeah. So yeah, it's been, this week has just been working on that little quiet booth. I think, I don't know if I told you this, but I actually made it all from garbage.
Ew.
Yeah, it's just compressed. I just took all the bags out of the dumpster, compressed them. Yeah. No, there was like an office upstairs that they were downsizing. Apparently, like because of COVID, they like, you know, went back and kind of reassessed their business needs and realized that they haven't used half of their office in like 20 years.
Oh, wow.
So there was like desks and shit coming out of this place like nobody's business. And they had a pair of 4x8 foot long assembly tables that they were using. They're like a print shop. And they'd had these things custom made. Like whoever the carpenter was that made these things did a really nice job. The, you know, all MDF, like 3/4 MDF with like really nice clean pine bracing. So I used those. I like cut them up and used those for the thing. I used a bunch of shelving. There's like 4 desks in this thing. I didn't buy any lumber.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why didn't you hit me up? This sounds like something I could have helped with.
You would have been trying to, like, you know, put little inlays in it and stuff.
Yeah, so pick up something. Nice. Would have been nice.
Yeah. So yeah, it probably weighs like 600 pounds. This little office thing.
It looks super cool.
Thanks, buddy. I made the mistake of, so I had to build it in the corridor outside of my unit because it's too big for me to build it in my unit.
Yeah, and it almost looks like it doesn't fit through the door.
It actually didn't when I first made it. I measured it all and I thought I was good to go. And then I was like, okay, I got to go home. I'm so tired. It's like 10 o'clock at night. And I got to roll it into the shop and it bumps into the door frame.
Oh,
and
I
said some very angry words.
So what did you do?
I had to get on a ladder with a fucking circular saw and cut the top of it off.
Wow.
Luckily, the top of it is like the trim extends above the roof. If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So I basically like...
You'd have to lop the whole roof off.
No. I screwed a straight 2x4 on each side as a guide and then went around it with a circular saw and shortened her up.
Nice, nice. So now it doesn't have extra trim on the top.
It has some, just less.
Nice. Give it a haircut.
Yeah. It's kind of fun. It's kind of a fun project to just like eyeball it. Like, I didn't draw any plans or anything. I was just like, this looks right. And I just, you know, just I made the base and then I made some walls and
yeah,
it went from there.
I mean, it's legit. You know what? We need one of these at our shop because I take phone calls all the time and it's like so loud. And then there's something about the frequency of, I don't know, machine tools that just like cancels out everything you're saying.
Yeah, man. Well, you should build one. Except the only problem is, so you can buy these things new, right? Like there are companies that make them. There's one company called Room, I think, that makes them. And I got some prices, and the very cheapest one that I found was $5,000 US plus delivery of a, you know, 500-pound giant box
room.
Thing. Like, yeah. So
I got offered one. What was it called? I forget the brand name, but I got offered one years ago. I was like, what the fuck are we going to do with this thing? No thanks. Let's just like take
it. And now you're like, damn it.
Yeah. I mean, I should have taken it and sold it, but they were offering to sell it to me, but for really cheap.
Right.
Now I could really use it. The other thing we want, modular room, since we're speaking of modular rooms, is a second spray booth. We were shooting Tim shot a sparkle finish today. It's the first time we've ever done a sparkle finish.
Right.
It's just glitter.
You can't get the glitter out of it. It glitters everywhere.
Well, yeah. Tim knew this was going to happen because this even happens when we shoot metallics, but to a much lesser extent.
Right.
You're basically just like exploding a glitter bomb in the spray booth. So he just pulled everything out of the spray booth.
Yeah. Right.
And put up sheets, but it's glitter is like relentless. It goes everywhere. I haven't looked since he did it, but he said it's everywhere. So I want to make a pop-up spray booth just for shooting the glitter, the sparkle.
Right.
Tim wants to farm out sparkle finishes, but
I don't. That sounds like a good idea, and yeah, I think Tim's not going to be happy with the result. Given
well, they don't have to do the whole finish; they just have to do the color, which is sparkle, and then
right. And you just send it to like an auto shop or something.
Well, no, I mean maybe another guitar maker, but there's none that we know locally that would do it.
Right.
Maybe one person, but I think he probably also doesn't want glitter in his booth. but yeah, just the color. We'll do the scraping, top coats, everything, like send it to them taped.
Right.
Ready for color. Just spray bomb it. Or glitter bomb it.
I feel like years and years ago, I saw a spray booth of some, maybe it was like an automotive spray booth in a factory or something, where every wall was like a waterfall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's what Fender has. It's just one. They just have one single waterfall.
Okay.
And I guess the vacuum or sorry, yeah, the fan is on the other side. It sucks the air through the waterfall. But the waterfall is the filter. So the water catches the overspray and just.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, that's my basic understanding of it. But apparently they're best.
Right. You should have four of those, one on each wall, so that all of the walls just become waterfalls.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean.
You can send me the money for that idea in my account.
That's what. I think we owe TLC the money, not you.
TLC?
The band.
What? Oh, Jesus.
We got to give them credit.
And this is, so Tim told us last week that he was expecting another child. And if he had,
Nick.
Did I tell you, did I say Tim?
You did.
Oh my God. Sorry. What's your name again, buddy? Yeah, if you hadn't told us, now this is how we'd know the extra level of dad jokes.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I'm doing double duty now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry. This week's been long, man.
We're recording on a Friday.
Yeah,
because I spaced out. Is that what you were going to talk about? You were going to talk about how this week has been crazy.
Well, I've just been at the shop like super long hours too, working on this stupid portable room thing.
And it's like, when you have to start having, like I did this today. I've been doing dumb work all day. Not dumb, but like just, not like the high precision, whatever. I mean, our version of high precision that you normally do, like this detailed, fine finesse work, and then you just like you start measuring to a quarter of an inch, and then you like it's just you kind of get used to that, and you're like, yeah, sick.
Yeah like today I installed all of the carpet on the walls in the little booth today, and for the first two walls I was like going into MDF and my little like hand operated staple gun was like totally fine, and then the third wall was chipboard with a phenolic laminate.
Oh wow.
And the staples were just bouncing off. They were like bending in half. So I was like, okay, fuck it. More violence is the answer to this. So I went and got my nail gun.
Uh-huh.
And, if I was doing like the best possible job, I would have like, put those nails on like 6-inch centers in a nice grid. Instead, I was just like, just like wherever I felt a nail should go, a nail went.
You threw on somebody... some Swedish death metal and just went to town.
It wasn't Swedish death metal, actually. It was American death metal.
Oh.
It was Lamb of God. I just went to town. It was fun, though. Nail guns are fun.
Nail guns are fun. We're actually going to do a bit of a little, reno of our jam space area.
Okay.
And we're going to do, a curved slat wall.
Mm.
So I'm going to
put some guitar hangers and stuff on there?
Yeah, something like that. And so going to be lots of nail gunnery.
How many nail guns do you own?
Just one. It's a nice.
Just a framing gun?
No, it's a pass load, like a brad nailer.
Oh, air or
yep,
air. Like portable, right?
No, portable would be nice, but part of we're splitting our team in two.
Mm.
Half the team is going to do the slot wall, and then me and Ryan, the other half of the team, are going to do run air lines to some of the other workbenches.
Oh, nice.
So we probably should do that first so that we can run an airline
that there you go.
Is close enough to use the Brad Nailer
yep.
to build the other section, to build the slot wall.
Yeah.
That'd be smart.
Brad Nailer is actually the only nailer I own as well. It's very useful. I should probably buy a Finnish nailer, actually. I feel like for some stuff, the heads on the Brad Nails just pull through too easily.
Oh, yeah, I know. But you can put staples in. I mean, mine, you can put staples in.
I don't know about mine.
I've never done it, but right. you can.
Yeah, mine's a Porter Cable. It's this really nice little magnesium alloy bodied Brad Nailer. I don't even know why I bought it. I don't know. I don't remember where I got it. Like, I just have it, you know.
It's a handy thing to have. I mean, we super built handy. Our entire shop. Like, it was an empty 2,600 square feet. Totally empty.
Are you telling me all those 2x4 walls just have Brad Nails in them?
No, but we built all these built-in cabinets and built our workbenches, and we went way over the top.
Right.
Building the stuff. None of it's we still have one, our big assembly table, which is like a torsion box, a 4x8 torsion box.
Right. Made out of marine ply, probably too, right? Like
all MDF.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. MDF is so stable.
It's sick. Anyways, yeah, the Brad Nailer is key.
Yep. So my girlfriend, after like looking at, buying a house or whatever, my girlfriend and I were looking at, okay, what stuff can we build? Because I've been talking to her for years about like, oh, we could build like a little tiny home or something. You know, I think it'd be a good experience. So of course I start looking at nail guns. apparently like fully electric nail guns are now like a completely viable thing. Which is pretty cool.
Doesn't surprise me. It's amazing what's electric now.
Yeah. It used to be that there was like, it had like a weird spring in it. You know, it'd be like, the old ones that I tried, you'd hold the trigger down, there'd be this delay while the gun like wound up.
Oh, yes.
Then it would drive the nail.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. And they sucked. Mm-hmm. But the modern generation of like cordless nail guns, they have like a nitrogen, like a pneumatic cylinder in them. That's full of nitrogen. And the gun like compresses that almost like an air rifle. And keeps that compressed until you pull the trigger, and it just instantly lets that go. And that's what drives the nail. And man, these things are like, you know, overdriving a 3-inch framing nail. Like,
yeah. That's crazy. You know,
And I've seen some videos of them, and it's like bang, 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 like really, really fast.
So convenient. I mean, because having air is kind of annoying.
Yes, they are quite heavy, though. I will say that they're like 10 pounds.
True.
for a 21-degree framing nail.
For a soft guy like you.
Yeah, I'm a bit limp in the arms these days. I did see also they Milwaukee sells a brushless cordless compressor now.
What?
Yeah, it's it runs on their M18 system. And
wow, what's that, battery operated compressor?
Yeah, and you can run like, you know, a pair of like Brad Nailers or whatever. I haven't seen videos of anyone running a framing nailer off it, but you absolutely could if you weren't going like full tilt, you know.
I also saw in a battery operated power washer.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And you use a two liter bottle as the water. I don't know if they were.
You have to refill that every 5 seconds.
Yeah. I don't think it's like 1,000 PSI, but.
Right. Yeah. I was really surprised when I saw the cordless compressor. That was one of those things where I was like, that's not going to happen. And then I was like, okay, well, the battery must be like 5 minutes. Nope. Apparently, it's like, you know, half a day off one decent sized battery.
That's
know?
Sick.
Yeah, it's really cool. And it's quiet. Really, really quiet. Like as quiet as like the California Air Tools compresses.
I don't know those.
They're like, have one in your office.
Oh.
You know, they're like 60 decibels or something. They're very quiet.
Better than Kaiser?
Screw compressor? Yes, actually. Because the Kaiser is like, my Kaiser is quiet, but it's still like a really big whooshing sound. You know, yeah. It's like a really big fan.
Now that I have a screw compressor, like comparatively, it's so much quieter. But now I'm just used to the noise it makes, and it's still fucking loud.
Yep. Yeah, you're not wrong. Yeah, I mean,
it's like, I think it's 65 or 68 decibels.
Right. Yeah, mine's a bit quieter than yours, and I like the sound of mine better. Yours has a bit of like a high-pitched.
Yeah, it does. It's got a bit whiny.
Sounds a little bit like a table saw.
Maybe like that's a table saw if you were like in the next room.
Yeah. Mine's just a whoosh. You know, it's just like a big fan.
Right. Yeah, that's not so bad. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's still like, I mean, I'm still building this little quiet workroom because if it kicked on in the middle of a video conference, that's going to be a pain in the ass, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But that little, like, a cordless compressor, like, I was thinking, like, okay, you know, let's say I'm building a home in the woods, you know, do I get like a generator and a little like pancake compressor and then run pneumatic guns? Or do I get, you know, a generator and cordless guns, or I could just get a cordless compressor
and a solar panel?
Yeah, there you go. Or so whenever I say that I actually quite like the Cybertruck, everyone gives me the side eye. They're like, really? But one of the super cool things about the Cybertruck is that it's supposed to have a small air compressor and an inverter built in. So you can power like 110 volt tools just by plugging them into an outlet in the truck bed.
That's handy. I mean, my mom used to have this Oldsmobile minivan.
Okay.
And it had a air compressor and an outlet. You could fill
That's awesome.
Yeah, you could fill up. We used to go car camping and shit, and you could fill up like an air mattress or a fucking your bike tire.
Right.
It was sweet. And then it just had an outlet as well.
Yeah, that's super useful.
It was.
Especially, you know, in an Oldsmobile, like a traditional gas car, you're going to run the battery flat pretty quick using that, unfortunately.
We did.
But the Cybertruck has like a 60 kilowatt hour battery. So you could like, you know, take your air conditioner camping with you and run it for like 3 days, you know, like it's kind of crazy having that kind of power hooked up to like a little inverter like that. I think it's gonna be super useful for a tradesman.
Yeah, well, the new Ford Lightning, Thunder, whatever.
Oh, the F-150, right? The electric
F-150, which looks sick. It has some features like that.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty sure
it makes sense.
My brother-in-law was telling me about it because he's a contractor, and he's super interested in that.
Yeah. It totally makes sense. Like, if you think about, you know, you're having to cart that kind of shit around anyway. And if it's just built into your truck, super handy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I wonder how actually, like, if that could replace some of your more, you know, professional tools.
Well, even just stuff like having, you know, a rack of battery. I mean, I don't know about you, but like, all of the Milwaukee like M12 tools that I've bought, they all came with an individual battery charger each, you know? So I've got like six battery chargers or something. You could just like screw those onto a bit of plywood in the bed of your truck and have them connected to the outlet.
Yeah.
And then, you know, all of your batteries are always getting charged. That would be super nice.
That would be cool. We desperately need some new fucking drills.
Oh, really? How come?
Because we share them.
Okay.
I'm actually incredibly amazed how good the quality of these hand tools we bought 8 years ago.
What are they?
We've got a Milwaukee drill and driver set, like the mini ones with the little battery.
Yeah, the M12 batteries. It's the same as the one I have.
Yeah, I think I bought it because you told me I should.
Right.
And then we have a what's the name of it? It's like blue and black.
Oh, Metabo?
No, not Metabo.
Bosch?
Makita.
Metabo's green.
Makita?
Makita. Yeah, Makita's blue, fucking, I think.
Yeah.
Bosch and Makita are both blue.
This thing we bought when we started building the shop out and I've dropped it off an 8-foot ladder dozens of times. It's still like perfect. It still works perfectly. The battery's still good. It still holds a charge really well. It's incredible. These like contractor tools are amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of settled on the Milwaukee M12 stuff. I just bought an oscillating saw yesterday, which, so in the bottom inside corners of the little workroom, because I was reusing all of these tables and shit, they had like square corner braces in the bottom inside corners, and they were stapled on two sides and then glued in place as well. And I was like, fuck, I just need to shave like a quarter inch off these so that I can put the carpet in flush. Otherwise, there's going to be like a lump there. Uh-huh. And I tried like using a handsaw, and then I was like, there's staples in this. Like, this is not going to work. So yeah, I went and bought the M12 oscillating saw, and that made, you know, what would have been otherwise an incredibly painful job, just like
those things are
10 minutes.
Yeah, those things are sweet. Tim bought one for a totally random reason as well, to do some shit at his house. And I feel like that's just something that'd be nice to have. Like, I know in my back of my mind that he's got that. I'm like, I'm going to use that for something. Because you can just like get right into the square of like into a corner.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you right now, an awesome, awesome use for them is cutting tabs off parts.
Oh, like
I used to have one. I used to have one, which I broke or it died. But when I was using my CNC router, I would, you know, window machine parts, leave little tabs, and then you just use the oscillating saw to zip, 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 cut them off flush. Super nice. I think if I was going to do that in the future, I'd probably put like a little piece of like Teflon on the underside of the blade so that you can run it right up against the part without marking it. And then you're also just leaving a tiny bit of the tab so you can sand it off or file it off.
That's a sweet idea, actually. I mean, most, I feel like a lot of people just sort of break them, right?
Like, yeah. It doesn't work though, if you've got tabs on like four sides of the part.
Right. Right. So if you really want like high stability, a lot of stability in your part still.
Yeah. Yeah. Then it's super hard to like, I guess you could come back and like trim those tabs in the machine until they're like almost nothing or whatever, but
yeah. But I mean, that's a really cool, way to tackle that problem.
Yeah. I've done it a bunch and it works really well. And those little oscillating saws will cut, you know, aluminum and steel.
Like, they have like Dremel attachments too, like to make a Dremel and oscillating saw?
Maybe. I was looking, I mean, Dremel have their own one. It's called like the Multimax or something. Okay, rather, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah, I was going back and forth between like the corded ones and the cordless, and you know what, I'm really glad I went with the M12 cordless one. It's really nice. It's just, it has like a toolless saw, like blade change. It has like a cam operated kind of grabber for the blades. It's just nice. Mm-hmm. You know, I like it when you buy something and you're like, okay, this is like nice to use, exactly what I wanted, you know?
Yeah. Well, when we started building at the shop like 8 years ago, we wanted to we needed a circular saw. And my buddy who is helping us do the work is a contractor, was a contractor. And he was like, you have to get a worm drive. A skill saw worm drive. I was like, it's like $150 more than like just a cheap circular saw.
Yep.
But it is really nice. I don't miss that $150.
Right.
Every time we use
it. Well, you guys stole my Bosch circular saw for quite a while there. I think we had it for years. Yeah. You don't remember that?
No. Are you sure? Because we've had our skill saw for...
This was a long time ago. This was like when you just moved in or something.
Oh,
interesting. He borrowed it for a while. Yeah, I mean, I literally haven't used that circular saw. Must have been a piece of shit.
because we went and bought a good one.
I don't know. It's fine. It's a Bosch. It's not Ryobi. I haven't used that saw in years though, and this week doing the little quiet room, I used it a bunch. You know, it's funny. It's one of those things that you just don't. If you're not like a contractor doing this kind of stuff all the time, like I was like, oh, how am I going to use this thing? You know, like I don't have a nice table that I can use it on without cutting it up or whatever. And I was just like, I'm stupid. Like all you have to do is change the blade projection so that it's just coming out of the bottom of your material, and then just chuck your material on the floor on a couple of 2x4s that you don't care about, and you can cut whatever you want.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I posted a video on our Instagram of me cutting up a like 2-inch thick, 18-inch wide piece of genuine mahogany, like that was 8-10 feet long, with our skill saw.
Right, and that's what you want a worm drive saw for.
Yeah,
cutting stuff that thick. Yeah,
no problem. Even better than our 2-horsepower table saw. Like.
Right.
That would have choked on it.
Right. Yeah, I this is maybe a little bit next level, but I the other week I had a, so I tend to like buy aluminum stock if I'm like at the metal place, you know, I'll buy offcuts and stuff because you never know when you're going to end up using it. And one of the bits that I bought was a 16-inch by 20-inch 1-inch thick plate.
Wow.
That I just had sitting around. Yeah. And the other week I had a project for it. I wanted to use it for that quench press. So I was like, okay, I need to cut this up. And so I was like, you know what? I've seen people using a skill saw to cut up aluminum like this, so I'm going to give it a shot. Did not go well. Did not like that. The blade was like vibrating left to right. So rather than making, you know, like a 1/8 kerf, right, like it normally would, right, it was just like, it's like a badger had chewed one edge of it.
That's a pretty serious piece of metal.
But you know what, dude? I put that on my, I have a Makita double bevel sliding compound miter saw with a 12-inch blade. I put it, that plate on that Makita, zip right through it. No problem at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we cut metal on our table saw. It's pretty legit.
What metal do you cut on your table saw?
I mean, I've cut brass and aluminum.
Yeah. Yeah, I hate table saws. I wouldn't want to do that, but chop saw I'm totally fine with, honestly.
Really? Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
that's just the most annoying noise in the entire shop, but whatever.
The chop saw or the...
Absolutely, the chop saw.
Mm. Just because it's like jumpy, right? Like they're like...
It's just loud. I don't know what it is. Yeah. Even when it's not in the cut, it's fucking annoying.
You need a worm drive chop saw.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
We have a Bosch chop saw. It's that like dual, I don't know, action. I don't know how to describe it.
Oh, it's one that'll sit flush up against a wall,
exactly,
right?
With yeah.
The weird, it has like almost like door hinges or something.
Yeah.
A pair of door hinges kind of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sweet. It's
a nice
super annoying to change the blade on it, but.
Why?
No, it's just like too compact. It's hard to get in there.
Mm.
But we used to have this DeWalt that was not a sliding. It just was straight up chop saw. And
yeah, it's the same one that I think I got you to buy that.
Okay,
saw.
Yeah. It was great.
I had the same one.
We ended up selling it. But then I regretted that because now I went out bought myself a Ryobi one for my house for just doing. I built a porch. And it's actually pretty sick. Came with carbon tip saw. It's like it cut like butter.
Yeah.
I mean, through fucking pine, but whatever.
Well, yeah, that DeWalt, the non-sliding DeWalt miter saw that you and I both had, that one, I think, honestly, that's one of the nicest feeling saws that I've ever used, just because there's no, like, because it's such a short and simple mechanism, there's like no slop in it at all. Like, you cut a 90 on that thing, and it's a 90.
Yeah, I actually felt, it feels almost better than like the Bosch sliding one we have. What are we talking about, Aaron? We're talking about like cheapest, shittiest tools that you can buy. I mean, they're nice. Like I'm always impressed by contractor tools, but
yeah, we're not talking about CNCs this week.
No,
that's fine.
I want a Hermley.
What? Okay, so you just said you have a Ryobi at home.
I don't want a firmly at home.
You don't?
Well, sure, maybe.
Are you, yeah, okay, let's talk about the blending of these two things for a minute. Have you ever seen a Strybig panel saw?
I don't know. I've seen, the only panel saw I've ever seen is at Home Depot.
Yeah, those are Strybigs. Those are like, that's like a $60,000 saw.
Doesn't surprise me. That's an impressive piece of kit.
Yeah. If you guys have ever seen like those panel saws that they use at Home Depot to cut your you know, plywood sheets up, those things are dope and I want one.
Yeah, that'd be a handy thing to have.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about your homely dish.
I'll start with we're gonna start making our tailpiece in-house.
Amazing.
So we got a couple ideas about how we want to make it, but we're gonna start cutting metal on the hoss.
Ooh, brass. Get ready to find some metal chips in your wood bodies.
Eh, whatever. I mean, there's lots of more processing down the line when a body comes off of the machine. So I'm not too worried about it. We're not going to be using coolant. We're just going to be using air.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, especially not in brass.
Yeah. But without getting into too much detail, there's another project that we have in mind that we want to start doing. I may have told you about this in secret, but
I think you have. Yes.
Aluminum that we also want to start making on the Haas. And I want to mount a vise I want to be able to put a vise on our machine, but our entire table on the Haas is covered by a vacuum like pallet base.
Just make a vacuum base for your vise.
Yes, exactly. So what I want to do is make like an 18 by 15. That's kind of our standard pallet size that vacuums down.
Right.
There's two vacuum chambers, basically, sections. It'll vacuum down like a 18 by 15 inch piece of 3/4 inch Mic 6 surface. And then on that mount a rock lock base. Fifth axis rock lock base.
Oh, okay.
Then you can put a vise on that, or you can put their right angle, their 90 degree rock lock thing. And now you just, and then you can mount the vise to that. Now you kind of have, you just have basically a manual fourth axis.
Right. Yeah.
Which
I
think it's just amazing. I think that's a sick way to a workflow. I think that's a wicked workflow because you never have to take the part out of the vise.
Have you ever seen the press button fourth axes, whatever they're called?
Don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. So, you know, like the fully electric fourth axis you'd buy for like your Haas, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can, you know, chuck it in there.
But I do know what you're talking about. Yes.
Forks
axis
drive and everything.
Yeah.
You can get ones that are fully mechanical
and
they just have a pair of push buttons on the top. And you get the machine to push the button, and each time it presses the button, the thing rotates by like 5 degrees or whatever.
I just heard about this. Maybe it was with Intolerance that was talking about this, or I don't know who was talking. Yeah. Anyways, I just heard about this recently.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea for stuff like that.
Business and machining, but
right.
Yeah, that's super cool. But how much are those?
I have no idea.
Because I'm talking about $4,000 in fifth axis kit to be able to basically have manual fourth. You know, you have to take the vise out, flip it, or put the right angle fixture in.
Right.
And then a turn of an Allen key and you're good to go. And it would be presumably super repeatable. And then you never have to take the part out of the actual vise itself.
Right. Okay, I getcha.
You're just repositioning the vise. I don't know. I just like that, the idea of that workflow.
The one thing I'd be concerned about is just like, how are you locating the pallets
on like a precision what are they called?
Like a bushing in a
bushing in a like a diamond pin and a round pin.
It is a diamond pin and round
pin. In phenolic, though. The base is phenolic.
Yeah, I think that should be okay.
It's well built.
Yeah, I think the top plate, as you said, would want to be aluminum so that you can like spread out the forces over the whole like subplate.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Anyways,
I'm super excited about that. I just want to be able to put a vise on. So my biggest regret in the way we designed this is there's no vise that you can put on it.
Yeah. Right. Well, it sounds like you're going to fix that.
Yeah. Be a problem. Mark had a cool idea about actually inlaying a raw clock base into our pallet base.
Mm.
So it was flush.
And then you can just have the vacuum over it and around it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why don't you do that?
Well, I mean, he was keen on that idea. I like the idea of being able to mount, like, to just stick with the pallet system. Because you could put, like, two raw clock bases on a pallet. I mean, I suppose you could inlay two rock lock bases as well.
You know what? Actually, there is a good reason not to do that, which is getting chips
all
over your vacuum.
That was Tim's concern. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
By having it as a pallet, you're kind of protecting the base.
Yeah.
At the same time.
I mean, the other thing you could do is like, you know that you like the phenolic subplate now. Maybe make an aluminum version of that subplate just for a little bit extra stiffness.
Yeah, that's actually our long-term goal is to do that.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I think you'll be fine. Well, I mean, don't Haas sell 4-axis or 5-axis vices now too?
They do.
They're probably a lot less expensive than the RockLock stuff.
They might be, but I don't know. They don't have a zero-point system the same way. And yeah, I think it would be, it's like, I mean, $4,000 isn't nothing, but we could make something ourselves, like a, you know, I don't know, some fixturing that would do the same thing, but then we have to make all that shit. Like, I just want to get started. I want to get the ball rolling on this.
That sounds cool, man.
And that's good stuff. Like, the fifth axis stuff is sweet.
One other trick too, given that you're going to be trying to machine aluminum dry, I haven't personally experienced this yet. I hope to soon, because I actually just bought a friend in my workshop building was closing down a shop, and I bought all of his aluminum stock, which includes a lot of 7075 aluminum. But my understanding is that when you're machining dry, 7075 is a lot more forgiving than 6061. Okay. Like, it tends to stick less, tends to break chips more easily. So
cool.
You know, for what you're going to be doing, it's going to be a little bit more expensive, not that much, and it might just make your life easier, you know.
That's good to know.
Plus the tensile strength is like double more.
What is tensile? What is that? What does that like refer to?
Basically, like, if you stretch something, so let's say you just take like a rod of the aluminum and you put it in a machine that like pulls it on either end. How much force can you apply to it before it permanently deforms?
Okay.
So that's what it's called, your yield strength.
Right.
So if it's like 40,000 PSI yield strength, then if you have a 1 square inch cross section, it can hold 40,000 pounds before it starts to plastically deform, before it starts to yield,
right?
Like permanently get longer, basically.
Right.
And then you have your ultimate tensile strength, which is how much it will. Yeah, exactly. What the pressure is when it breaks.
So we're trying to reduce flex. We want this part that we're making to not flex or.
Right.
So is tensile strength important in that respect, though?
No. Okay. No, it is not. Yeah, so when you're choosing a material to eliminate flex, the like property that you'd be looking at is what's called the Young's modulus, which is what basically it's like a numerical value for stiffness. Mm-hmm. Right. So a material that has a low Young's modulus, I think, is more floppy than one that has a high. Might be the inverse. I can't remember off the top of my head. Yeah, so like, you know, when people are like, oh, I want something really stiff, so I'm going to use hardened steel. It doesn't work that way. Like, this hardened steel has a higher tensile strength, but it's not more stiff than regular steel.
Right.
Which is kind of counterintuitive, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're trying to minimize flexibility or trying to minimize flex, then often the design is the easiest way to do that.
That's kind of where we're coming from is how do we design stiffness into this? And I think that's like it's part of the big reason we actually want to design this part.
Right. And increasing the cross section. So, you know, if you go from like a 1-inch rod to like a 1 1/4-inch rod, or a 1-inch rod to a 2-inch tube, you know, the 2-inch tube will be way stiffer than a 1-inch rod. For potentially less weight,
right?
So it's all about that.
Yeah, weight is another thing that we're trying to be conscious of. Anyways, right. I should have more to talk about, but probably not in the next couple of weeks. But I am excited.
Ooh, exciting! So you're going to be spending some tooling money soon.
Well, we'll see. we got to design. We got to like do the mock-ups and stuff first, and see what we really need.
Cool. Looking forward to seeing it. Well, I haven't had much chance to keep up on space news this week, unfortunately, because, you know, as we said at the start of the show, there's been a lot of other stuff going on. But one cool thing that I saw is actually, let's go back for a second. So one really funny thing that I think came out of Russia was that Russia was like, you know, in response to all the sanctions, they were like, they really made a press release or something saying, fine, we're not going to sell rocket engines to the US anymore, which is hilarious because they're not anyway. Like they're just restating something.
SpaceX is selling them all now.
No, the US was buying RD-180 rockets from Russia to use in the, I think it was the Atlas V, which is like, you know, after the space shuttle went away, that was like their only like heavy lift rocket, but that system's all being phased out anyway. So they're not buying any more engines anyway. So no worries, no problems. And then yeah, like on the other hand, SpaceX has had 9 launches this year already, one every week since the start of the year.
Wow.
It's pretty crazy the pace that they're achieving at the moment. So I'm not exactly sure what's going on with Starship right now. I think that the environmental assessment at the Boca Chica base in Texas, which is where Starship's getting built and where it will hopefully get launched, got delayed. So they're not able to do any launches until that's finished. But I know that they've actually been building a second Starship launch and assembly facility at Cape Canaveral.
Oh, cool.
Classic. In Florida. Yeah. Yeah. So my understanding is that the facility at Cape Canaveral is actually going to be the main launch site. And then the Boca Chica Starbase will be like the kind of R&D facility. So I think worst case scenario, they like, you know, ship all the gear over to Cape Canaveral and continue the development there. Although they do actually, this is kind of Bond villain shit. I don't know if you've heard about this, but SpaceX actually bought a pair of
volcanoes.
Yes, exactly. No, a pair of oil rigs.
Oh,
because I never realized this, but oil rigs are like, they actually float. They can move.
Oh, is that right?
So yeah. So like they bought these oil rigs and they're basically going to like take all of the drilling shit off the top and then build them out as like ocean going launch platforms.
That's badass.
So basically they're like, well, if you don't, you know, approve the environmental assessment, we'll just build our own launch site and it'll have blackjack and hookers.
Right. It's like that radio station that used to operate in the
there was one that used to operate at
International Z? Or what do they call that?
Oh really? International Waters.
Yeah, International Waters. Either that was real or it was just a movie I watched. So Pirate Radio.
There you go. Do your research Google on that one, people. Well, there is actually I don't know if you ever heard about this, but there was after World War II, there was an abandoned like air defense station off the coast of England, like around the UK somewhere. And this guy just went out there and was like, well, this is international waters, and this shit is mine now, and I name it the Principality of Sealand. And it's, as far as I know, it's like still, or last time I checked at least, which was years ago, it was still a thing. You can like pay money to become like a citizen of Sealand. And they send you like a passport. And they were operating as like a data haven. So like companies that didn't want to have their data, you know, tied down to a national government could have like their shit on Sealand. It's very sketchy. Sealand. But
it's almost an oxymoron.
Yeah. I mean, especially given that it's just basically like an oil platform. But yeah, if anyone's interested in the story of that, it's actually super interesting, the like history of this place. Like, I forget, some other company, or maybe it was another country, wanted this platform and he was refusing to give it up, so they like kidnapped his family. There was like helicopters landing on this shit, like trying to force him off there, and there's like a whole history around this place. It's pretty nuts. I'd be curious to see where it's at these days.
Yeah,
trippy.
Well, if anybody is interested in the story of Pirate Radio, it's got scored 59% on IMDb.
Is it a real thing?
It is a real thing. It's a real thing.
Right. Based on a true story. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Well, I feel like that's a pretty good note to wrap up this episode. We've gone all over the place.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely didn't expect to talk so much about contractor tooling, but
you know what? I think every machine shop has that kind of stuff kicking around.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that stuff's critical, essential. We use it every day.
Super handy. Yeah. Yeah.
And I do want to get another drill. So it was.
Milwaukee M12, man. I can lend you my.
Sounded like you said
my impact driver. Milwaukee M1000.
That's your silly accent.
No, Milwaukee.
Milwaukee.
Yeah, I really. Like my impact driver, I use it for changing fixtures and stuff, and tightening and loosening pit bulls. It actually works great.
Sure. Okay. I use my Makita, so whatever.
Right. But like those little M12 drivers with the tiny little battery, you know, will like just hang on your pocket. You hardly notice them. And then they'll, you know, put a wood screw through hardwood, you know, destroy it without even realizing.
Yep. They're legit.
Yeah. Yes. All right, buddy. Well, we should let you go. Let everyone go. Lovely speaking to you all. As I said, I hope everyone's safe and well, and we will speak to you in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Cheers.
Bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.